Welcome to Keep the Hotel Empty. Today we've kept the hotel empty to welcome in audio engineer, also a man of many hats, and one of my dearest friends for a long time, Mr. Jake Demoski. Jake, welcome.
Hello. Good to be here.
Man, so happy to have you.
Dude, it's, you know, another lovely, sunshiny-ish day, you know, here in Florida. You know, much better than, well, this year's been a little mild, but I'm sure better today than what it's been. So yeah.
Jake, you know, travels to us from Wisconsin, so you're our
good to be in the warmth, you know? Yeah. So
this one kind of happened upon us, but I'm very glad we got the chance to do it. And being that I know you well, I kind of know some of the story. So I want to kind of press rewind a little bit, some of maybe what I don't know.
Okay.
Take me back to where you're seeing, I'm guessing, your dad or the people around you that have some of this technical ability, the ability to make something out of nothing. DIY isn't a scary thing at all. Talk to me when that starts to be recognizable to you and you start to employ it.
I remember, you know, really young being, you know, just impressed by music, you know, like and not only music, but like the technology of it. You know, when I was probably 4 or 5 years old, and I knew my dad constantly, he worked at Pennzoil. He'd come home. He'd tap a beer, he'd put on a record, you know, and we'd jam out, you know, and that was, you know, kind of, you know, normalcy. And it got to a point where, you know, I'm old enough and I'm just, you know, I was like, yeah, you know, like, I love it when my dad comes home and puts on records, you know. And so it was like, I mean, I'm 4 years old and the Poison record, I think it was, Look What the Cat Dragged In was like my dad. That was what he got me from, you know, because I was, you know, it was MTV era and that's what you're seeing, you know,
right.
But whatever. But I remember just like standing at the speakers one time and asking my dad, like, how does the sound come out of this box over here, you know, like, and you put the record on over there? Because, you know, if you put a record on, you can actually, you know, you can hear the needle.
Right.
Very high pitched, but kids can hear higher frequencies than, you know.
Right.
As you grow older, those kind of fade, you know.
First, for sure.
But it's just, you know, I remember being very intrigued at, you know, 4 or 5 years of age. And both of my parents were very, you know, self-sufficient. Right about that same time, my mom ended up starting. She was running a daycare from, you know, the house is, you know, when I was born, that was kind of, you know, her thing and main source of income. And obviously back in the 80s, that was, I think, a little more free-willed, you know.
Yeah.
Well, came to a point where she's like, I want to expand this a little bit. Decided to do the in-home daycare, or I take it from an in-home daycare to a before and after school daycare in the Fond du Lac schools, you know, and she had that for 30-some years. So
dang.
That obviously was an influence on, you know, the what can I do, you know. And so I remember at about like 6 years of age starting to take apart toys, like not anything really audio wise. Well, actually at about 6 years of age, I think the same thing, but I would tinker with stuff. I took apart my Ghostbusters car that had the the little claw that came out and would grab Slimer and bring him back in. And I was like, how does this thing shoot it out of here? And so I took a screwdriver and took it all apart, and then my dad comes home from work, and I'm like, Dad, can you help me put this back together? Like, all these springs popped out when I took it apart, and he's like, you're not supposed to take that apart, you know? And one time I took my bike apart and took the whole, you know, sprocket and the whole inner gear off and cleaned all the grease off the ball bearings and put it all back together. And I was like, oh, man, Dad, I was probably, you know, 7, 8, 9 at this time, you know, but
yeah.
Always had access to tools, you know, and always was around my dad who was always working on stuff. I mean, you know,
right.
Very, very handy, you know, I mean, he was a Jeff of all trades and I consider myself a Jake of all trades, you know,
it's for like, real.
You know, and, you know, so both of them. And then my dad later in life started his own business doing low voltage installs of in-home stereo systems, security systems, central vacuum systems. And about the time I was 12, shortly after that, my parents bought some land and built a house where my dad and I basically wired the whole thing. You know, he did all the electrician work and home stereo. That's, you know, pair of speakers in every room, you know. So it was
awesome.
It was definitely a learning experience, and I was like, yeah, this is pretty cool, you know. I like working with my hands, I like building stuff, you know, and started playing guitar at, you know, 7. I started taking lessons, I believe it was 7. You know, my parents had gotten me a plastic guitar when I was like 4 years old, and like I said, I was totally into, like, you know, just the hair metal and like guitar solos and like, oh man, these guitars are awesome, you know? And so they gave me this little plastic acoustic guitar, and I just remember being like, you know, like I'd wail on it all the time, but it's like, you know, the thing wouldn't hold a tune. It had, you know,
right,
these junk plastic strings on it, and, you know, but they were like, okay, well, he plays, you know, he's got enough interest in that toy. Let's get him a real guitar. And you know, those things definitely help when you're that young, you know. So at 7 years old, I started playing guitar, and I remember at first, you know, Mike's Music, you know, going down in good old downtown Fond du Lac and teaching, you know, the E string, you know, E, F, G, and finger positions, and Mary Had a Little Lamb, all one string stuff. And
so you started real traditional.
So yeah,
musically.
Yeah. And it was, you know, I'm playing an acoustic, and it's like, you know, at first it wasn't really at all what I was. I'm like, you know, I want to wail, you know, like this is like, you know, so. But I stuck with it, and then after a couple of years, you know, for Christmas I got a, you know, electric guitar and a little crate amp, you know, and.
Oh, the
and then
amp.
It was just like, all right, yeah, this is what I'm talking about. A little distortion, you know, crank it up, play a little bar chords, you know, like so. And then obviously, you know, that kind of, you know, same period, you were kind of starting your same thing, you know, but definitely the influence that was impressed when I was a child about, hey, you can, whatever you want to do, seeing both of my parents kind of being like, hey, we're going to, this is what I like to do. I'm going to, you know, find a way to make it work, or I have an idea. I'm going to see where I can go with it, you know, see what it materializes into. So that definitely has always made me, and still, you know, I mean, both my parents are gone, but unfortunately, but every day, you know, whenever it's like, you know, you have a challenge, I don't think that ever changes in a person's mind where it's like,
right.
Oh, well, you know, you were influenced and raised by these people, and it's like, okay, well, what would they do? What would they want me to do? How would they take care of this? And so that's always keeps me like, oh, well, you know, I gotta keep working, you know? And I've self-professed always had a pretty good work ethic.
I would say to that. I'll profess,
know,
for you.
I mean, you know, so that's definitely come from them, but not only them, my grandparents, you know, I mean, like, you know, it's coming... Come from a hardworking family on both sides, you know, and it's, you know, just kind of
so
in the
that,
blood, you know. That's
right.
That's kept me kind of like, well, this is, you know, you get a feeling sometimes, and it's like, this just is, I have to try. This is, for some reason, this is what I, you know, I feel. This is, you know, I'm supposed to be doing something other than what I'm doing. And I felt that for a long time and went for it, you know. And
that's the thing,
kinda,
the going for it,
yeah,
part.
Exactly. You know, that wasn't real easy, but once you do it, it's like, okay, well, you know, you just make the decision. Either I'm going to do this or I'm going to.
So that's where we kind of get to. You know,
yeah.
You're in your teenage years now. You're starting to realize that you've got a skill set. You've got a mad proclivity to learn and then put it into use. But you also start to take on some of the responsibilities of family life pretty soon, too.
Yep.
So where is your mind at, and how do you navigate, okay, I'm good at a bunch of stuff, I've got a bunch of passions that I'm not afraid to chase, but I've also got a bunch of responsibility. How does your road start to unfold there a little bit?
So it basically went from, okay, here's what I want to do, to here's what I need to do, and then it's like, okay, now, well, here's what I'm going to do then. And so, you know... you know, having a young family life, you know, it's like, okay, well, I was going to school for a pre-apprenticeship electrician program.
Oh.
You know, like I said, I
so
worked with my dad.
So that was the first choice.
And so, well, actually, my first choice was I was accepted to Madison Media Institute. That's where I was going. You know, I was like, yep, here's where I'm going. Went down to, you know, and, you know, God rest their soul.
Yep,
you know?
Shout out NMI.
Yep. But so I was accepted there, went and toured there, you know, did that type of stuff. And then it was just like, well, you know, obviously other responsibilities became more important, you know, and you know, it's like, okay, well, with kids on the way and getting, you know, a little bit more of the thinking financial-wise and—
At a real
you
early
know,
age.
Exactly, you know, and so I was like, you know, I mean, we're talking, I was like 19, and I'm like, okay, well, I'm going to school for something that I know I can fall back on, you know, something that is a trade, you know?
Right.
And I had a couple of buddies that were electricians, and I mean, they're working like 80 hours a week. And so I was going to school for it, and I was, you know, it was super easy. This is stuff, you know, like, I mean, like I said, math is a pretty good subject that I'm, you know, if I put my mind to it, it's like, okay, I can do this, you know? And so it was a math class and an electrician, you know, kind of concepts and intro to electricity. So that was all like, man, I've been working on amps and building, you know, electronic, you know, kits and doing all this type of stuff for years since I was a kid. So
right.
It was, you know, not anything difficult, which I think kind of hindered the situation because I was like, man, this is all it is? Like,
there's
and then,
no mountain to
and
climb.
Then it's like, yeah, it's like, and a lot of pulling wires, you know, like, I mean, and obviously there's way more to it, you know.
Oh,
I mean,
of course, of course.
But, you know, I'm a young kid and I'm just like, you know, like I said, that feeling, I was like, this is not what I want to be doing, you know, this is like, and then 80 hours a week, like, great, I'll be swimming in money that I'll never be able to spend and, you know.
Not be around your kids.
And I won't be happy, exactly. And it's like, and then I won't be around, you know, around the family. So I ended up, and this was years down the line, probably 2 years after that, started looking online and found it was a like one of these online career connection type courses, mm-hmm. and they hooked me up with my good guy Jeff Taylor in Milwaukee, who at the time had an audio studio and a full production studio doing video production and, you know, duplication and still does Fresh Coast production. Started working with him doing an internship, which, you know, turns out he was also an instructor at Madison Media Institute. So
oh.
I was like, oh, okay, well, you know, this is great. Well, the first interview we had, I brought him, you know, a disc I had recorded that year for Christmas. Because I was young and had children and, you know, not a great job and bills to pay. And it's like, I got like 50 Christmas presents I need to buy and not enough funds to do that. But it's like, but I do have some talent. So I recorded like, I don't know, I think there's 9 tracks on there or something. Like,
that's,
you know,
awesome.
Just acoustic Christmas album that used my little 4-track Tascam cassette recorder, you know, that I had got when I was like 13. So I knew how to use it pretty well and, you know, layered, bounced some tracks back and forth and ended up, I think it was Christmas Eve, we got home from my grandma's house and I set it in front of my, you know, just my regular, you know, Koss or Pioneer stereo or whatever and RCA outs to the aux in and used my RP200 Digitech pedal for all the effects on it, you know, and reverb and stuff like that. And it's like, you know,
that's fine in a way.
It's like you're performing, you know. And then I sent that to a Sony CD recorder. And so anyway, he's listening to it and he's like, this is great. We're, you know, what app did you use to record this? Well, this is like 2005. I didn't even know. 2004 it might have been. I didn't even know what an app was. I was like, what? What? He's like, what app did you record this with? And I'm like, I used a Tascam cassette recorder. four track. And he's like, wait, you, wait. Oh man, who mixed this? And I was like, I mixed it on Christmas Eve. Oh, well, who mastered it? Who got it to CD for you? I'm like, that's how I just mixed it straight to CD. And he's just like, he's just like, but you're not using a computer? I'm like, nah, I don't like computers. I'm like, know how to use them. Great with computers. Don't, that computers don't make music, you yeah. know? And he's like, actually they do. And I was like, well, and then he shows me, you know, he's got Pro Tools and Logic and Mark of the Unicorn. And I'm just like, oh, it was just like, you know, brain,
yeah, your turn.
Brain bust, you know? And I mean, I had heard about Pro Tools. I think it was like 2000. I remember reading either a Guitar World or Guitar One or one of the Guitar Magazine articles about like this new up and coming, like, you know, I think it was, I don't know, Disturbed or somebody like that, that was saying, hey, oh, this is great. We're doing this new album and we can just like go in and play full takes of these songs and then, you know, make bed tracks that are, you know,
right.
from versions we played weeks apart and whatever. And I'm just thinking like, yeah, that's never going to be. I've read about a lot of big studios and, you know, like just for me having like a SMPTE time code generator that I could hook my ADATs up and be like, nope, nope. It's like, you know,
right.
if the two machines don't talk to each other, like, you know, beyond that, it was kind of like, I'm not worried about that, you know.
It was
like,
way it was
still,
years.
It was still, yeah, exactly. That to me was kind of like, you know, wasn't the technology that I was interested
in. So you get introduced to the technology, and what does that
well,
do?
Well, and then it was just like, then it was the sky's the limit. So then it's like, you know, I get a mini Mac and, you know, I got, you know, Logic and Mark of the Unicorn. I get an 8-channel interface and, you know, start recording. Actually, so the first thing of my internship, you know, after I kind of hung out with Jeff and he's like, yeah, you can, you know, I think you could definitely learn some stuff, you know, from this. He goes, not necessarily audio recording though. He goes, I think you've got that down pretty well. He's like, this, you know, this is a great example of your skills and but he's like, you definitely, you know, let's hone your skills on the computer, you know, and make you a power user. And like I said, I was already, you know, introduced to computers in, you know, second grade, you know,
right,
you're
right,
using
right.
them every day. It's just I was like, you know, I had never had a computer that did something that cool as being like, whoa.
This was better than Number Munchers.
Oh man! So after the and I'm not a gamer. I don't play games. I play guitar. You know, it's like you
right.
know. And now at this age, it's like you know, I don't play games. I just wish I could play guitar. You know, like you know,
nice.
It's like you know, but it's definitely we got to you know. Experienced some things, and I don't remember where.
Well, so at that point, though, he started bringing you into video restoration.
Oh, yes,
too,
yeah.
Right?
So with Jeff, yeah. So that kind of transformed.
And you were totally green in that world,
no,
right?
No, it was just like, okay, well, you did great with this audio stuff. Let's get you into, you know, doing computers. And while we're at it, we've got, you know, video projects that we're working on here. And he goes, I really think that, you know, that would be a good thing for you to learn. He goes, because kind of in this area, he goes, trust me, I've owned recording studios for years, and it's a hard market to make money in. Mm. You know, I mean, the gear's expensive. You know, the facilities aren't, you know, you can't just, you know, it's getting easier, obviously, these days. But
at that point,
it was like you needed kind of a real room, you know. And,
right.
And so got introduced to the video thing, and so, like, right alongside learning, you know, Logic, I was learning Final Cut, you know, and you know, or Premiere. And
the
you
video,
know,
you weren't kinda, doing production, you were doing restoration?
Well, so video, it was a little bit of everything. So anything from, you know, corporate shoots and events, you know, not a whole lot of live streaming at this point. That was, you know, pretty much everything was to tape, and then, you know, you post-produced it, or it was, you know, just you had on-site production crew cutting it directly there. But a lot of corporate stuff, you know, obviously you kind of, you go where the money is. And at the same time, I was still doing front of house for a lot of local bands, and, you know, I got into the internship, started recording actually my cousin's band, and still working, you know, with one of the guys that I met in his band from Texas, just mastered a couple albums, Jesse Stratton Band. Go check him out. He's pretty good, you know. Nice. I mastered almost all of his stuff and mixed a lot of that. But it's nice to make those connections and kind of see the continuation of everyone flourishing, and it's not every day that it's, you know, you know as well, being in the music industry, or, you know, in kind of the music scene in general, it's like, you know, real life happens and people come and go, and, you mm-hmm. know, and come back, and so it's always it's nice to have those type of things going on, and working at the studio back when I was younger, it was kind of a stepping off point, and I got an opportunity after doing the internship a few years later, to where I was like, okay, I'm gonna bite the bullet and I'm gonna go freelance, and kind of like, you know, I'll start my own LLC. You know, I mean, started Demosky Production Services, and it was like June 28th of 2008, and it kind of was only made possible because Jeff Taylor, who I was, you know, had done the internship with, and him and I hit it off right away. I mean, both like Beatles fans, and, you know, he gave me a questionnaire like, okay, well, I don't accept everyone as a student, and gave him the CD, and he was like, okay, well, you know, and we started chit-chatting, and I told him, he's like, well, what kind of music do you like? And like, Beatles was one of the first bands out of my mouth, and he loved the Beatles, And then I was like, yeah, pretty much anything with guitar, bass, and drums, you know. I'm like I like, you know, like older music, but I like a lot of newer music. And so it's like, you know, over the years, we've always turned each other on to, like, you know, he'd show me stuff that was like, oh, you ever heard of this, you know, 30 years ago, you know, all just a bunch of different prog stuff, and I'd bring him some of the prog stuff from today, you know, and so it's
good to have someone around you that you can mutually sharpen.
Exactly. That relationship that, you know, you never know when that tipping off point is going to be. And it's, you know, it's one of these where that was a, you know, it's been a 15-year relationship. And because of that opportunity, had I been like, oh, well, okay, you got this work, and, you know, it'll be kind of steady work for a while, but you never know. It's not like, hey, I can guarantee you all of this. It was like, hey, I got some hours for you to work. You know, I'm looking for, you know, here's the deal for this thing, though. It's like, you know, I'm not going to hire you as an employee, because it's kind of a temporary type scenario. But even when I started my internship with him, we had talked about, you know, I was like, yeah, at some point I would like to work for myself, you know? I mean, my parents kind of self-sufficient, you know, for the majority.
So you had that in the plan from the
get-go. Yeah, exactly. And it was just like, I saw the flexibility they had, and when it was like, okay, you have a family, and it's like, you know, even the hustle that, you know, you have to do starting your own business or going freelance, or, you know, just, you know, side hustle, whatever. It's you know, it takes a lot of time and energy, obviously, and I think the benefit of doing it, you know, for yourself, or at least, you know, a great benefit to me, was that before that I was working third shift, or I was working, you know, a regular first shift, but with overtime. And it's like, okay, I'm still not really, you know, in control of anything financially, right, or, you know, time, or my time wise, you know, and being a creative type person, it's like that just, you know, it just drove me crazy. So it's like, you know, it was one thing that I always knew. It's like, yeah, I'd really like to kind of find some way to, you know, obviously make it so I'm the one that's telling myself, hey, you got to do this, you know? It's like that little bit of motivator that it's like, well, it's just me. You know? And I've kept it that way. I've had plenty of events where, you know, you hire out subcontractors and do whatever to make it happen, but just a single man, one-man band, you know, so you know as well as I do. I'm everything from the janitor and the mailman to the the CEO and salesman, you know, and everything in between. So it's like, you know, there's only so many hours in the day, but it makes it enjoyable when the variety, you know, you got, you know, except paperwork. If I didn't have to do any paperwork ever, that would be great, you know?
You got to subcontract that one out.
Yeah, yeah. I'm working on it. Yeah.
So I would normally ask somebody, you know, what goes through your head when you're going to branch out on your own? Because generally speaking, it would be hard to fight some kind of fear or reservation. But it sounds like that wasn't even in your purview at all. So what's going through your head when you start Demosky Productions? Is it like, finally, here I go?
Well, so it was kind of like, yeah, it was like, all right, okay, this is it. Like, all right, I just started my business. You know, I got a client and, you know, I got to get more clients. And so then it was like, you know. At first, I would do anything that I could, you know. It was like, okay, Demosky Production Services, it's vague enough a term that it's like, well, what do you produce? Like, well, just about anything. I mean, I could.
What do you need?
I'll make you a sandwich if you want to, you know. I'll paint your house, you know. I'd really like to do some audio video production for you, but if you got money to pay me to do it,
I'll produce a sandwich.
I will do whatever you want, you know, and I'll write you an invoice and, you know, let's get this started, you know. And so it was one of those where it wasn't, you know, full head on, especially, you know, in the area that I'm in, there's not a big draw or demand for, you know, there's no news station, you know, it's not like there was a huge, you know,
medium
branching
market
out that I could be like, hey, do you have any opportunities? And so, and I was working as a painter, and it was right about, it was like January, mid-January 2008, and that was, you know, before the stock market crash, and the company that I was working for, you know, ended up losing a big corporate contract, and so everybody, it was like, you know, we got to lay everybody off, you know? And that was kind of the catalyst that was like, okay, this is the straw that broke the camel's back, because now this is, you know, I'm not looking for another job. I hate that, you know, that whole let's, you know, first impressions and, you know, and then being told one thing and you're thinking, oh, this is a good company to work for, and then finding out, you know, that,
right,
well, maybe those things you told me, you know, you'd never intended on doing, like, you know, like I heard the stories of my parents and uncles and, you know, like your typical employer-employee type kind of scenario, you know. And obviously, being young, it's like you don't understand a lot of stuff. It's like, I thought I was getting paid this. It's like, well, with, you know, Medicare and taxes and, you know, it's like, yeah, that is what you're being paid, but, you know.
Not what you're taking home.
Exactly, yeah, so it's, you know, they always seem to get you, you know, some way. But
so being a master of your own reality was important.
It was super important for me to just be able to be like, okay, that was it. I'm not going to work for anyone, or at least I'm going to try my hardest not to ever work for someone else unless it's, you know, on my terms is kind of what I was thinking that point, you know. And obviously, it's kind of somewhat true, but now it's gotten to the point where it's like, you know, there's months where it's like, I'm glad to get to work, you know. Like, I mean, I'm, you know, I went and did the CMT Awards back a few years ago, and it's like, you know, that was when things were kind of weird, you know, with the world. And so I was just like, you know, and I'm not a huge country music fan at all, but, you know,
so
it's
how
like,
do you go from
those are good gigs, you know. So it's like,
yeah. So how do you go from I'll produce a sandwich if I need to I get to go to CMT? So what's some of the growth road look like?
So for quite a few years, like I had mentioned earlier, I ran, you know, front of house. Actually, that's kind of one of the things that I was like, okay, well, you know, I like the recording thing, but that's kind of, you know, it's really organized and structured and not, you know, not so creative, or it can be, you know. I mean, there's different aspects to it, you know.
Mm.
But, you know, it's too long of a project almost, you know. Like, getting from start to finish was, you know,
it's
there's always
road.
Some drudgery in the middle, you know.
Yes.
And I found out that, you know, with live sound, and I started doing, I think I did the first live sound gig on my, you know, on my own with gear that I had owned. And first PA I think I bought was when I was like 13, something like that, you know. And I think I was 18 when I ran my first show, and it was at the VFW in Oakfield.
Oh, dang.
And,
Roots,
yeah,
baby.
Quite a few bands. Some guys, I remember Ryan Call's band, 41 to Madtown, they played there. And I was just like super blown away because, you know, he's from the, you know, he was at the theater at the time. So right. I never knew he was a guitar player. And then
killing.
It's like,
shout out Ryan.
Just amazing, you know? Like, yeah. So that was like kind of the start of, whoa, this is really, this gave me like a rush, like, you know, like live sound. And like, you're the guy that's like, hey, man, we got to get this, you know. Things sound good, everybody's, yes. Things sound bad, everybody's like, bro, what's going on, man? Like, you know, like.
So you like serving
yeah,
that role.
Yeah, yeah, and at that point, it was like a fun type of stress, you know?
Yeah.
It's like, plus, you know, it's like, how is this not fun? I'm like, you know, listening to loud bands, and I'm, you know, I'm making them sound good. Like, this is great, you know?
Yeah.
Like, so I did that for quite a while, you know, and...
So that
up,
was
you
an
know,
easy thing to come back it, to when it, you started doing Demosky Productions?
Yes. That was something where I had kind of always been doing that along the way. So like I said, I always had this idea of I'm going to start my own business, or I at least want to, you know, I want to have some income of my own that I'm not just, you know. And it was just one of those things that kind of fell into place because I had the gear.
Mm-hmm.
So it was just like, oh, hey, that's how that show happened. It's like, oh... My buddy Corey Marson had booked the show. Actually, I think it was one of our old high school teachers, and Corey's great buddy of mine, one of my best buddies, and he and I have been in a couple of bands, but this was back when he was still in high school, and so anyway, I got roped into it just basically because they knew I had the gear, and they're like, hey, this room isn't
classic.
This big, like, you got some gear, like... You know, and I mean, I probably made like $100 doing it, you know, and I mean, it was a mile away from my house. So I was just like, yeah, this is, no, you don't even have to pay me. Like, this is, you know, just let me get my gear out and light it up, you know. And so once that kind of turned into I'm going to start my own business, that was obviously a shoo-in for like, I'm going to offer this service, you know, like I'm already doing this service. So it's like. So I picked up about a dozen bands that I was doing, you know, walk-on gigs for, and, you know, some I would provide small PAs, and at that same time I was, right about that same time, just before that, I was playing in a band with Corey, you know, and my dad was actually playing drums with us, you know,
yeah.
And it was fun stuff, but, you know, we'd play four-hour bar shows, and we brought, you know, it was your typical, you know, we set the stage, we set, you know, the PA.
Lots of work.
Exactly, you know, and so that kind of, you know, doing the front of house thing after a while got a little old, and I transitioned, you know, into broadcast. I found some work doing broadcast audio.
Yeah, how'd you happen into that?
And it was actually, so I had, you know, working with Jeff Taylor and Fresh Coast, bunch of stuff that would come through there was, you know, some was strictly audio and audio recording. Actually, when I started working with him, we built a large green screen cyclorama, 40-foot coved, you know, huge movable,
dang,
you know, green screen. So we did a lot of green screen shoots, and so, you know, political stuff would start coming through, and then just, you know, networking some of the people that would come through the studio and you know, hey, you know, we got this show coming up next week. You interested? You available? And so I fall into the broadcast thing kind of by happenstance of just at the time looking for some work, perusing Craigslist, and I see an ad looking for an A1 for some local sports championships that are going on. And it's like, okay, well, I've done, you know, a couple of small time shows like that. You know, wasn't a real intricate ad, but, you know, signed it or filled it out and sent it back, got a reply right away. position's been filled, send out a cover letter and a resume. And so I was just like, wasn't really the first thing on my priority list. It's paperwork, you know, like I said, I'm like, yeah, I'll get to it, you know, maybe, you know. Well, then the next week I got a call and it was one of my guys with Rush Media, and they were a new kind of newer company at the time, and now they're one of my biggest clients, but calls me up and he's just like, yeah, so the guy that we had last week really didn't work out too well. We're hoping that maybe you could come up, you know, on Thursday, and this was like on Monday, and so I, you know, you do what you got to do, and I work the schedule, and it's like, yeah, okay, yeah, I'll be there, and so I go up, and we do a four-day baseball championship, and, you know, the executive producer of the company comes up, and he's like, great job, you know, what are you doing the day after tomorrow? How much you want to work, you know, and at first, I kind of treaded lightly. It's like, okay, well, what is this all about? You know, this whole, you know, I'm used to the live sound thing where it's late hours and you're schlepping gear and going deaf. That was the one thing that I hate. And I wasn't really going deaf, but I always put earplugs in. And it's just like,
something you got to be conscious of.
You know, you know as well as I do. Like, if you're putting earplugs in, your mix better be dialed in so that you can let your ears acclimate before you're like, okay.
You're right.
I can't just put earplugs in and be like, sounds great to me. Like, no. You see how bright it is in here? You know, and obviously, you know, you get an RTA and you can visually meter some of those things. But, you know, it takes you out of the element when, you know, you're trying to mix with earplugs in. So
for real.
So that was one of the things that I was just like, you know, what are the downsides? What are they going to be the downsides of this? And then it turs out I was like, wait, I you know, there's not a whole lot. Like, yeah, sometimes I'm schlepping heavy gear, but it's not that heavy. It's not dual 18 subwoofers heavy. It's not,
there's no drum
like,
kit.
Exactly. It's not 1,000 pieces heavy, you know? And it's like, and they're regular hours. It's like, I can do these shows and be home with my family at night. And it's like, and I'm not going deaf. Like, you know, that was a real bonus. And I'm not, you know, as well as, you know, most of the people that know me, it's like, sports are not my, like, cup of tea, you know? Like, I mean, I played sports as a kid, you know, and it's like, I'm just, I don't know, sports for me is not, you know, not what lights my world up, you know, but
definitely,
you know, it was kind of like a slap in the face from going on, you know, 20-some years of being like, you know, sports, I don't know. I can't stand sports, you know. Now it's like I'm doing sports stuff, you know.
Careful 70, what you say. You put 70%
of the time, you know. It's like, but it's funny. It's like I listen not to what's being said. It's more the how it sounds, you know. It's like I'm listening for inflection and timbre and mic placement type of things, not necessarily like, half the time the game's over, I don't know who played, you know, who won. It's like,
but I know.
Oh, yeah, you know, like, yeah, you know, it's like, oh, well, there was this team and this team. I don't know, you know, players, all that. It's like, it still goes over my head. I did an interview with Ryan Braun, you know, so after getting into the broadcast thing, that really opened up, you know, a lot of stuff. And one of the opportunities I have was doing I can't even remember his name. That's because I'm not a sports guy. But I said to the producer on this thing, I was like, yeah. I'm like, this guy could be the biggest thing in baseball right now, and I would have no idea. I'm like, I'm here to do audio and make sure it sounds good, you know, and you let me know if there's anything else, you know, you need. And he's like, well, there is one thing. And I'm like, okay, what? And he's like, well, this guy is the biggest thing in baseball right now, so it's just going to be like you and me and him. And he's like, so... He's like, yeah, just, you know, you might want to know that. I was like, oh, yeah, that I kind of would have put my foot in my mouth. It's like,
yeah,
it's like,
no kidding.
But these, you know, the athletes, like, they really are, they, I think they kind of appreciate being treated like normal people.
Sure,
you know?
Sure.
And it's like, I mean, and again, the whole broadcast thing kind of opened up a number of different avenues as far as, okay, well, I got into it doing A1 position, which is actually mixing the show, you know, and controlling the comms and all of that. Well, then it's like, okay, well, there's other shows where these are bigger shows. Like, you want to be the, you know, the A2. Would you be opposed to? It's like, well, no. So I'm outside of the truck setting microphones and running cables, and it's like, you know. So being that, you know, I started out kind of at the higher level, it's like, well, I'm looking to make it. I'm not looking to be like, oh no, this is I'm just exclusively, you know.
Right.
I'm an A1, you know.
Yeah.
It's like, well, you learn things when it's like you're doing the other job, like, cuz at that point it's like, I don't really know what this guy's job is that I'm telling what to do sometimes. and the funny thing is, my brother Noah became my first A2. So I had these shows that I'm doing and mentioned kind of to the crew. I was like, "Yeah, so is there ever any audio assistance?" Like, and they're like, "Oh yeah, well, you know, if you know anybody, you know, bring them along." So the next show I had, I brought Noah, and he was a little apprehensive at first. I'm like, "Hey, I got these guys that want to pay you to be my A2," and he's like, "I don't even know what that means."
Don't need to.
And I was like,
"I'll tell you."
I'm like, "Doesn't matter. I'm your boss. You listen to me. That's all that really matters." And he's like, "All right, okay." So he comes along, you know, does great. You know, we've been in bands. You know, we're brothers, you
right,
know,
yeah, exactly.
You know, it's like you've known him probably just about as long as I have,
yeah,
you know,
almost.
And so, you know, it was just like, don't sweat it. And so he comes in and so he was my first A2.
Well, that's
then,
awesome.
Then they soon learned that, oh, wait, your brother went to New York Film Academy. So he knows something about video. And they were already like, you know, and I was doing the video thing from, you know, starting out working with Jeff, and he's
right.
Like, you got to get into video, you know, shoot wedding videos, events, you know, like, and he goes, and with the video, you know, you can not only charge more, but audio comes along with it. So
it's been well important for you to take
exactly.
Every gig that
well,
comes
up. And I also found out that video is something that it's like, it's enjoyable. It's like a somewhat like painting almost, you know, you can for doing video edits, you know, well, for instance, the Meteorize video, that was like one of the videos that was kind of like, I was cutting my teeth on it. And
right.
I remember you called us up. That must've been probably right around 2008, something like
yeah,
that. And you're like, "Hey,
there,
we're
yeah.
coming up playing at, what was it? Frequency.
Yeah.
I think you guys played at." And so me and Noah were just like, "Well, let's grab some cameras. Let's go shoot their set, you know?" And I remember, you know, just trying out a lot of layering and filtering and, you know, which works great, you know, it worked great for the, you know, the artists,
that
you
was
know,
the
like, yeah, exactly. You know? Yeah. So, and that was kind of like one of the turning points of my, like, hey, this video thing's kind of, you'd be pretty creative with this. This isn't just like, you know, a shot, you know, or lenses, you know. It's like when you start to realize, oh, okay, so here's how some of that stuff visually is done, you know, the smoke and mirrors, you know.
Right.
So that obviously was always tied in with whatever, you know, project that I had. The video was kind of been hand in hand. You get the audio and get the video and the audio kind of seemed to come along. So.
Right. But then you get into kind of getting into some of these things where it's all getting brought together now.
Yep.
So talk to me about when that happens. It's like almost like the COVID era. Yeah.
Well, and so the broadcast thing I had been doing for a while, and Rush Media, who I, you know, like I said, is one of my biggest clients.
Right.
They're doing a lot of remote productions. And so before the whole COVID thing happened, you know, broadcast was kind of making a turn where, you know, obviously news stations and things like that have studio to studio and remote shooting all the time with, you know, you got the weather, poor weathermen who always seem to get sent out in the worst weather, you
yeah,
know,
yeah.
Like, but doing that used to require satellite. Now these days, a lot of the stuff is done over, you know, over the internet. You know, obviously, you know, who's ever watching this is probably yeah. on the internet.
Yeah.
You know, like so. remotely we were doing college football and basketball and things like this, where talent is in one area, and you know, we're either at a truck at the actual stadium, or you know, in a studio.
And by talent, and you mean the broadcaster.
Talent, right? You know, the two, you know, the play-by-play and color are usually the typical two pairs that they'll have on a sporting event. And but it could be like, you know, if you're doing like a satellite, an SMT, satellite media tour, then you might have a reporter that's, you know, from a news station, or a couple of people, you know, at a corporation that are kind of, you know, showing up, and they're on a set, you know, and they just call in and you remote in. And every news station, obviously, the different time zones, you know, okay, we'll do this hit at this hour, and, you know, we'll talk and promote, or, you know, whatever the case may be.
So you're balancing the audio as an intermediary.
So, yeah, it's kind of, you know, well, and then the job, sometimes you're the end result, sometimes you're somewhere in the middle, you know, sometimes you're a sub-mixer. It's like, sometimes you're just mixing for the talent on site. So with the remote stuff has, you know, come, you know, there's obviously challenges to it, such as audio and video, unless they're encoded through the same device, usually have different speeds. You know, videos tends to be slower than audio. So audio delay is usually something that needs to be worked out so that you've got a proper lip sync. But that's, with the remote shows, it really became kind of a lifesaver during the COVID thing. Obviously, everybody was going remote at that time. But working with Rush and already having that kind of under their belt, doing a bunch of remote shows, that allowed me to, you know, get quite a bit of, you know, work through them on those shows. When COVID hit, I was actually down here doing spring training baseball. We showed up at the park, and they're like, "Hey, what are you guys doing here?" You know, what are you talking about? You know, and so ended up going home. Was home for about 2 weeks. You know, doing spring cleaning and whatnot. You know, just kind of going stir crazy, and then one of the other aspects of, you know, anything for money was, hey, I'll, you know, you got analog video or audio, I'll digitize it if, you know. So that became kind of another hot spurt of COVID, is when people were stuck at home and realized, I've got all this VHS tape, I got all this mini DV, I got all this analog home video that I went to watch because now I'm stuck at home and the player doesn't work, or I don't have the player anymore, or whatever else, you know.
Right.
Or it's just on a form. Exactly. It's on a DVD and I don't even have a DVD player anymore, you know. And so that was kind of a lifesaver, you know. I mean, and that's one of the things where it's like, you know, you know, my dad told me once, and probably many other people besides my dad, you know, you don't put all your eggs in one basket. You know, like, you know, always keep a little opportunity for, okay, I got to have something else that if this hits the fan, where am I going? You know, what's the next, you know, what's the next move?
And that's never something any that, fear of the pivot because
well,
of that, huh?
Well, and it's like, you know, I think having the mindset of like, oh, well, I'm a Jake of all trades, you know, a master of none.
But it's that's like, kind of a liberating thing for you.
Yeah? I can do just about anything. And, you know, like we were discussing before, I've proven to myself I could do things I don't want to do and have no interest in doing, and I could do them very well, and I can also forget them immediately after
how
that's done.
How important is like, that to you?
I mean,
when you go to sleep at night, how important is it to, that you can say to yourself, yo, I can do it even if I don't want to?
I think anybody can do it. I think it's very important. I you know, it's always like, well, it's only you, you know. I'm the one driving this car, you know.
Right.
It's like I'm the one that.
That's hard for lots of people to accept,
though.
Yeah,
I mean, well, you know, I like I said, started a family young, and it was like, you know, I wasn't really, you know, of course I was scared. I was like, oh, God, what am I going to do? But it was just like, you know, it was like, oh, you know, I work very well under pressure. I'm like, you know.
Why do you think that is?
I don't know. It's just something I've always like maybe a little bit of OCD or some, you know, I remember as a kid always being like very anxious when it was like, you know, I'm building Legos or something at my cousin's house and it's time to leave. And it's just like, I got to finish this. Like, I'm not done yet, Mom. Like, let me finish this. And it's like, you know, obviously when you're younger, you know, it's like everybody's a little spastic, you know. And
yeah.
But there's still times where it's like, you know, it when I know I'm responsible for something, it's the pressure just makes it kind of easier. Because it's like I know I can't just avoid it, you know. It's like, well, then, you know, it's either, you know, well, there's always a choice, but it's like, you know,
one of those choices we ain't choosing.
Exactly. It's like my choice has always been to like I don't want to do this, but I guess I have to, you know, like so, and then it always, you know, seems to come out better in the end, you know, but it's easier. Having, I think, that mentality of like, you know, well, what am I going to do? I don't know.
Talk to me a little bit about the pressures of doing the broadcast thing in real time, because that's one of those things where your job is literally to manage the pressure.
Oh, definitely. And it's, you know, I think the knowledge of what's happening definitely can help you relieve any stress. And the most, you know, the most stressful jobs I've had, well, for instance, we were talking before about it was the first time I was ever going to be on like a real big broadcast truck, a 53-foot truck as the A1, and it's a Big Ten basketball, day before Thanksgiving, lots of viewership. It's go time. It's on, you know, it's on a 64 Fader Calrec Artemis, which is, you know, a board with, you know, and eight banks has 80 knobs of, you know, and they could be whatever, you know. So enough of a learning curve there that I'm not worried about mixing the show. You know, I'm not worried about patching anything. It's more just like I got to build a show on this board and, you know, or at least work off a show that's already built, but figure it out, you know.
I mean, right.
And I'm, you know, anybody can push faders. That's like, you know.
Turn the volume knob.
Yeah, exactly. But to get it there and to be like, okay, here it is, you know, there's the fader you push, you know, that's, yeah. So, well, I get a call the night before from the engineer and ended up having to fill in as the main engineer. And I was just, it was one of those where I'm like, wait a second, you're calling me and they're like, you're the only one in the area we can't even get anyone there by tomorrow morning. Our guy is sick.
With COVID.
You know, yeah, with COVID, yep. And it was like, you know, it's you or no one. And I'm like, all right, well, I'll give it my best, you know. Well, we had remote talent, you know. It was the first time we're testing out a new remote kit. And so 40 seconds, you know, to air, I remember keying in and telling the producer and director, like, all right, everything's tested and faxed. We're good with the studio. They got comms with us. They can see the video. You know, everything's good to go. And, I mean, I had been running around like a chicken with my head cut off for like 8 hours, you know. And so I'm thinking I got some time to rest. It's like, and they're like, great job, all right. All of a sudden, I hear master control clicking, 40 seconds to air. And I'm just like, oh, man, like, now I got to mix this three-hour show. And it was COVID. They had a laptop that was fake crowd sound, you know, so that at least it wasn't, there's no attendees at all besides the players. So,
right.
So, you know, it's
and you sounds, can't listen to squeaky shoes for
yeah, exactly.
2 hours.
I mean, if actually for, you know, when mixing basketball, it's definitely, you know, with no crowd, that was nice. You got some really nice, you know, game sound, but...
Yeah, right.
Yeah, that's, you know, it's like if you listen to the NBA and you notice you can hardly hear the court at all, as opposed to, you know, smaller college games or something like that. It's like, yeah, well, thousands of fans will definitely do that, you know?
Right.
So, but so yeah, that was a challenge, and
so
that was one of those
into
days.
This truck day one.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, and I remember walking on, and
they got 40 seconds.
Hey guys,
to go
how's
time.
It going? I'm Jake. I'm filling in today as the E1, and kind of looking around, and I'm like, yeah. Never been on a 53-foot truck before, but as long as you tell me where all the stuff is, you know, I know the gear, and so I'm like, why don't you point me to audio first, you know? And they show me into audio, which is always a separate room, you yeah. know, or typically it is, you know.
Yeah.
So that, you know, everybody else isn't disturbed by all the noise you're making. And so I'm in there, and I'm in there no more than a couple minutes, and the phone rings, and it's, you know, one of the big wigs from my client, and they're like, yeah, everything okay? You feeling all right? You're not sick, are you? I'm like, no, I feel fine. He's like, oh, well, I just got a call, and they're worried because they thought that the engineer was a little green. And I'm like, I don't think they mean my skin color.
Yeah, right.
And he's like, well, what do you think they mean? I'm like, I think they mean, like, my skill set.
Yeah.
Because I'm not the type of guy that lies to you. And I told him straight up, I'm like, never been on a 53-foot truck before, never ran this board before. You know, like,
might as well.
But we'll be fine. You know, it's like, you guys, you know, I might have to lean on you to tell me, hey, where's this and that. But, yeah. So I'm like, hey, being on the phone with you is really not, you know, gonna solve anything. So I'll call you if I got any issues, you know?
Yeah.
And so, you know, and throughout the day, you know, I get a couple more calls and you know, it, like I said, 40 seconds to air, it was close, but we made it, and we made it to air, and, you know, it was definitely a, you know, one of those moments where I was like, all right, well, if that was the worst this can be, I've had so much worse days. Like, that was stressful for sure. That was like, but man, it was so stressful that 8 hours was just like, didn't I just get here?
Right.
I just got here. Now okay, all right. Let's mix this show, and then let's get out of here, you know? So, and then I was back there again 2 days later. It was the day before Thanksgiving and day after, and, you know, it was that day, at least there was another engineer there, but like I said, we were testing some things out, and it was just another day that was like, you know, the challenge is kind of what I like. I like, you know, when working under pressure, it's like that really kind of, like, you know, it makes you feel like I earned it, you know, like, yeah. all right, like, I didn't think we were going to make it, and we made it, you know, like, you know, always in the back of your mind, it's like, yeah, well, I guess good thing we didn't, like, well, I'm giving up, got so, 2 minutes, not going to happen. It's like, in the TV and broadcast world, it's like, we got two minutes, come on, like, let's do this, like, and there's so many times where it's like, the amount of stuff that happens in 2 minutes is quite amazing, you know? So it's like, you know, I guess you ask, why do I think I work well under pressure? Well, because I'm lazy and I like to be efficient, you know, work harder, or work smarter, not harder, right? You know,
right.
Like, so that, you know, it's part of the creative thing too, I think, you know, like, kind of messy at times and very good at procrastinating, but
well,
it's like when you come down to it, it's like, all right, now here's what I'm doing.
And it sounds like you're keenly aware of the confidence building that it gives you, because in the adage where you're either gaining confidence or losing it, you got to walk in the truck and say, hey, this is my first go round. Well, if you got any chance to gain it.
Exactly. Well, and like I said, there's been plenty of opportunities, you know, that I've turned down where, you know, they're, oh, hey, do you want to, you know, you think you could do this position or, you know, and I know my own skill set. And, you know, like I said, it's just me. So I always try to be very honest. One time they asked if I wanted to shoot camera, and I was like, for a full game? I'm like, you know, I don't know any of the camera assignments. I don't even really understand this sport. You know, it's like, and I probably will, like, you know, forget I'm on air and whip pan, or it's like, you know, if you put me in the monitor wall, just label it Shaky Jake, because that's you know, probably what I'm good for. And they were just like, okay, we get it. Like, yeah, you know, maybe camera's not the best position for you.
But I
you
think
know?
The part that makes me curious there, though, that immediately comes to my mind is, why do you think it is they asked you to do that? Because they knew damn right well you didn't have the experience. Why do you think they asked you?
So the first few shows I was on, video was right behind me. And they, you know, you got five cameras coming in. They could be the same cameras. They could be different lenses, you know. And light goes through different pieces of glass and looks different. So you've got, you know, the V1 station, color correcting and painting the cameras. You know, you white balance them, black balance, you know, shade them. And I had, I guess, accidentally shown that, like, oh, yeah, I know how to do this. And the reason I knew how to do that was actually that I didn't really know how to do it. I just knew how to read a waveform and vectorscope from color correcting film, because that was one of the things, you know, the VHS and film stuff.
This is what I was
like, you know, an upsell was, hey, we can color correct this stuff. And almost everybody, you know, the film, that just became a standard, like, we'll color correct this. So you can't, you know, there's really no white balance on, you know, faded film or, you know, miscolored film or stuff that's gone red, blue, or sepia. So I was really good at reading a waveform and vectorscope and knowing, like, oh, the blacks are way too red, or, you know, whatever the case may be. So they figured out, hey, this guy knows how to do video, because he's helping video back there. Like, yeah, that's why does this camera look so purple? Like, okay, you know, like, pull some, you know, give it a little more green in your blacks. And it's, like I said, kind of fell upon where the key panel's open and I'm talking to this guy. So that's why they felt, hey, well, you want to run video, you know, and I guess I probably admittedly said, no, video's not, you know, I'm more of like, you need, you know, an engineer type, you know, or like you hook it up and make it work. And, you know, it's like, that's why audio's kind of my thing. It's like, you know, I constantly have something to tweak, you know.
Yeah, right, right,
you
right.
know, it's like you have to pay attention. It's like, you know, and it's nice to get offers, but like I said, sometimes you gotta say, hey, that's not really what I'm into. But the funny thing is, so like I said, I brought my brother on as my first A2. Well, then once they realized I could do video, they're like, well, you think your brother could do video? You know, he went out to New York Film Academy, and so he got into video. I got my cousin Nate Dobbs into my second A2, and then after that, it was like, well, that's when they asked about camera, and I'm like, oh, well, I've got another guy. And then it was like, oh, well, no, but I got another guy that I know, you know, and just feeding, you know, the people from my network, you know, feeding them that. And so after a while, we got the nickname DeMafia because, you know, they're like, yeah, it's the DeMafia. They're coming, you know, he's bringing six people here, you know. I had a couple of my daughters worked with me, my sons worked with me, you know. It's like, so it's definitely been a blessing, because now it's like I work with, you know, my brother and my cousin, a couple of my two closest, you know, hangout buds anyway. You know, we get to travel around and, you know, do work, you know.
You're right.
That's like, you know, and it's work, you know. It's like, but we've been doing it, you know, going on close to a decade now. And so it's, you know what to expect, and then it becomes less work, you know.
So I don't mean to be too heavy or maybe hit too close to home, but that brings up something I'm curious about. Do you feel at this point that you're becoming, or you serve some kind of role in your family that your dad did?
Oh, definitely. I mean, like, I've been Jeff Jr. for a long time. I mean, like, I remember when I was a kid, one of my uncles used to always be like, you're just like your dad, you know, like you're, you know, like it's, you know, something would get broken and be like, oh, I'd be the first to come over and look, or, you know, or with the guys, you know, like,
but
instead
now
of always off playing
with
the kids,
you
and it's like,
it
and yeah, yeah. And it's, you know,
full circle as can be.
Yeah. The influence is definitely, and as a kid, you know, my dad was more into mechanics, you know, and it's one of those things where I wasn't really into that, you know.
It was the mentality.
It was like, okay, well, and I still change our brakes and fix whatever parts of vehicles that I feel necessary, and most of them it's just like, I'm going to have somebody else do it, you know. It's nice to get to that point where it's like, you know what? I'm going to use some of this money I've made to pay someone else to do the stuff
to
that I don't want
to
do.
Time.
Exactly. So I can keep doing what I'm doing, you know. But yeah, my dad, you know, I definitely kind of filled that role, or I'm filling that same type of role, you know. I mean, it's weird, you know.
I bet.
It's like, you know, I melancholy kind of feeling, you know, that it brings up. It's like, I mean, my dad passed in 2012, and so it was kind of like I didn't really you don't really realize, my dad always said, you don't really realize, you know, that your dad could be your best friend and, you know,
right,
make sure it's not too late before you do. He said that to me at, I don't know, probably 16, 17, you know, the age where it's like, you know, you kind of butt heads with your dad, you know. And so then we ended up being in a band together. And, you know, my dad was a very great influence on me. So yeah. I try to impress that on my kids as well. My parents never really pressured me to do anything.
They gave you license.
It was more like, okay, well, you know, do what you want to do. Like, what are you into? But, of course, there was always kind of some, you know, expectation, you know, that it was like, well, you know, we expect you to do something, you know. I mean, I was always, you know, the Edison Scouts. My parents were both the scout leaders for a long time. I mean, my parents were, like, just always go-getters and, like, let's do this. And then it was like, you know, oh, we're having a Super Bowl party this weekend. And it was like every day was just like something going. And that was one thing that, you know, I've learned from, you know, being a parent long enough. I mean, a grandparent now, you know, it's like,
yeah, shit.
It's, you know, sometimes you just got to go with the flow, you know, and let things be like, okay, well, you gotta pick your path. You know,
well, you've greatly put that to your advantage.
Well, yeah, and I know from my own perspective, it's like, well, my path was kind of like not to fail. And then it's like, well, that's still the path. It just became, was it like, okay, what aspect of like, okay, well, I've climbed that step from being like, oh, job, you know, better job, another job, starting my own business, you know, you just kind of, you know, getting real clients, you know, finding other avenues. Because for a while there, it was like about 10 years. No, it was more like 6 years, I think, before I started doing the broadcast work. And it just kind of got pretty tiresome doing, you know, the day-to-day. I was doing video transfers and you know, live sound for bands on the weekend and stuff that was, you know, I'm making good money, but it wasn't like, okay, well, where's the avenue that, you know, what am I going to have to do to try to make something, you know, to supplement this? And I didn't really think that there was much audio-wise that could fulfill that.
Right.
So when I found the broadcast, you know, it was kind of a godsend, you know, which, and I think, you know, if you will it, it can happen, you know. If you have the drive to being like, okay, this is what I want to do, like, I'll just keep, you know, I'm still chipping away at it. Like, I don't even know what I want to do. It's just like, this is what really I like to do. I like to do audio, and, you know, I want to, you know, be able to support my family. And it's like, but I feel very blessed of where I'm at. And, you know, from, you know, 2008 when I started, I was, you know, wondering, okay, is this going to be a 1 year, 2 year, you know, how long am I going to be able to, you know, am I going to be able to do this at all, you know? So it's your, you know, your storybook, you know, entrepreneur story, I guess, of, you know, well, I, you know, but you make the choice. And
one of the biggest parts of that story, though, is your ability to go with the flow and your lack of fear with new things. And you've always been able to rest on being a good learner.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, and I'm a pretty quick learner.
Right.
You know, for the most part. I mean, it's...
Unless we're talking about paperwork.
Well, I was going to say, even with paperwork, I've found out I'm great at it. I just don't, you know...
Don't tell anybody.
Yeah, exactly.
You're
no.
going to be doing somebody's
no,
paperwork.
No, I'm great at my own paperwork. Other people's, I don't care. You know, you got to care for some things, you know, so...
Right.
But, yeah, it's... I feel... that everything that I've, you know, come through and where I'm at now is definitely a result of just, you know, determination. And, like, you know, even if it's slow determination or if it's, you know, okay, well, here's, because, you know, you say go with the flow, like, yeah, you know, I definitely go with the flow. It's like, I've got multiple things that I could go to if this doesn't work out, you know, that are still like, okay, well, I mean, installs, you know, there's with the audio, like I said, Demoski Production Services was kind of a vague name for the reason that it's like, well, I could do just about anything audio related, you know, obviously to what degree and, you know, but so keeping your options open and not feeling like, oh, well, I'm not doing that anymore. I've moved to this, right. You know, like it's like there's still well, when COVID hit as well, I, you know, I did a couple of painting jobs because it's like, well, people are also stuck at home and they're like, this wall is hideous.
Yeah.
You want to come paint this wall? Like, yeah, sure. All right. You know, so it's you just got to go with the flow.
So on that note, you got a lot of options. You got a broad skill set. It's not really about plan Bs. It's about which plan A I'm choosing.
Well, exactly. You know, so, I mean.
So with all that, let's get you out of here on something fun where you can have the options. If you could produce a dream project, would it be like you're going to get to do sound at the Super Bowl halftime? Or would you rather be in the studio and craft your perfect record?
I would be in the studio crafting a perfect record. I can get lost all day. I mean,
who would you choose? Your dream band to work with?
You know, if I got to work with Opeth or Carnival or like Steven Wilson, anything that he touches is great. You know, I mean, it's like there's so much good stuff out there, but
so
it's
something
like,
you can go down the nerd rabbit hole.
It's basically, you know, the records that really like get me like, wow, this is amazing. You know, they're guitar, bass, drum records that, you know, and these days it's pretty impressive on some of the stuff you're hearing coming out, just how good tones are. And
yeah,
like, you know, I mean, and
for sure.
I'm impressed mostly though when I see a record that, like, you know, like I was talking to you earlier, like the At the Gate stuff from like 1990, that's just like, what?
So raw dog.
Like, this stuff sounds amazing, you know? Yes. Like, and it's air moving, it's microphones, and, you know, I mean, and they're using direct boxes and amps, you know, directing, and so, but I would say, you know, some type of prog metal band would be my shtick. You know, Mastodon, I love those guys, you know, I mean,
You know what I mean, too.
I mean,
yeah.
Korn, if I would, you know, Korn's always been, like, my super favorite. I'm definitely, you know, would love to be in any type of studio space. Really just, you know, any heavy band. You know how it is. Like, you know, I mean, one of the things that being in the studio, as you well know, is you hear the same song over and over and over and over. So that was one thing that I learned after a while. I was like, yeah. Don't take projects that you're going to be like, oh my God, I can't listen to this. Like, you know, so it's like I said, always know when to say, okay, this ain't for me, you know, but it helps to have networks to be like, hey, I got a guy, like, talk to this guy, you know,
Hopefully the network leads to doing a record with Steven Wilson.
That would be awesome. Well, they've worked together in the past, yeah, you right. know, they could get us in, you yeah. know, do a little, you know, little new school. So.
Well, Jake, I so much appreciate you coming down.
It's a pleasure,
glad this
Eric.
Got to happen.
Pleasure, you know. I'm glad to be here in the Sunshine State.
Grateful to hear from you, brother.
Oh yeah,
thank
great
you.
To be here.
Thank you.